Act 5. Morning. You must be the change you want to see in the world. Mahatma Gandhi. Chapter 70. Mrs. Nightwing waits for us in the chapel, where she cradles the body of Mother Elena. "The creatures?" Anne asks, her voice ragged with the scream she spent. Mrs. Nightwing shakes her head.
"Her heart. She didn't fall to them. There is that, at least."
Mrs. Nightwing counts us as we file past. Felicity, Anne, Falson, me.
"Sahira," she whispers, "and..."
I shake my head. She lowers her eyes, and nothing more is said.
The girls of Spence sit huddled together. Their eyes are wide and frightened. What they have seen tonight is beyond teas and balls, curtsies and sonnets.
Mrs. Nightwing puts her hand on my shoulder.
"There is nothing more I can tell them. They've seen, and they are frightened."
"They should be."
"Is it my voice that sounds so hard?"
"They can't know what has happened."
She wants me to take what magic I have left and blot every memory of this evening from their minds, to make them forget so that they can carry on as before. There will always be the Cecilies, Marthas and Elizabeths of the world, those who cannot bear the burden of truth. They will drink their tea, weigh their words, wear hats against the sun, squeeze their minds into corsets, lest some errant thought should escape and ruin the smooth illusion they hold of themselves and the world as they like it. It is a luxury, this forgetting. No one will come to take away the things I wish I had not seen, the things I wish I did not know. I shall have to live with them. I wrench away from her grip. Why should I? I do it anyway. Once I am certain the girls are asleep, I creep into their rooms one by one and lay my hands across their furrowed brows, which wear the trouble of all they've witnessed. I watch while those brows ease into smooth, blank canvases beneath my fingers. It is a form of healing, and I am surprised by how much it heals me to do it. When the girls awake, they will remember a strange dream of magic and blood and curious creatures, and perhaps a teacher they knew whose name will not spring to their lips. They might strain to remember for a moment, but then they will tell themselves it was only a dream, best forgotten. I have done what Mrs. Nightwing said I should do, but I do not take all their memories from them. I leave them with one small token of their evening, doubt, a feeling that perhaps there is something more. It is nothing more than a seed. Whether it shall grow into something more useful, I cannot say. When it is time for me to visit Bridget, I find her awake in her little room.
"That's all right, love. I don't care to forget if it's all the same,"
she says, and there are no rowan leaves at her window any more. There is an ancient tribal proverb I once heard in India. It says that before we can see properly, we must first shed our tears to clear the way. I cry for days. Mrs. Nightwing does not force me to go downstairs, and she doesn't allow anyone, not even Fee and Anne, in to see me. She brings my meals on a tray, placing them on my table in the darkened room and leaving without a word. I hear only the rustling of her bustle as she treads the old wood floors back and forth. Sometimes, when I wake in the early hours, I feel as if I am emerging from a long, strange dream. The velvety light softens every edge in the room, bathing it in possibility. In that blissful moment, I expect a day like any other. I shall study French, laugh with friends. I shall see Kartik coming across the lawn, his smile filling me with warmth. And just as I begin to believe that all is well, there is some subtle change in the light. The room takes its true shape. I fight to go back to that blissful ignorance, but it is too late. The dull pain of truth weights my soul, pulling it under. I am left hopelessly awake.